say that one of the earliest ones was Sir James Jeans in his mathematical treatment of mathematical theory of electricity and magnetism. And then he revealed that even he had gotten the idea from Lord Kelvin, possibly 10 or 20 years earlier, back around 1900. Lord Kelvin had reached this conclusion, but guess what it was all based on? What kind of an error had been made for 750 years before Lord Kelvin?
What?
That the compass, the little, lowly, humble compass that we have been using since it was first invented in the 1100s, has been read backwards or upside down for that length of time, 7.5 centuries, before any scientist apparently discovered.
Is that the reason I don't do well on the golf course? Because I always take a compass with me on the golf course.
It might
be. To get out of the rough.
I'm not kidding. It might be. It might also be why Columbus thought he was sailing to the East Indies and then ended up in the West Indies. You recall that little goodie?
I've often wondered about that, Larry.
Yeah, I imagine, imagine quite a few people have. Well, so Exhibit A in our case here, that Western civilization's belief system is mostly upside down. Exhibit A is that the poles of the Earth in all four directions of our compass are backwards and upside down, and that means according to the two basic laws of magnetism. I won't go into those technicalities, but believe me, seven or eight scientists have testified to this in writing.
You know what I want to do?
Yeah.
You know, we've been treating this kind of lightly here with some levity as we came on here because I wanted to get your attention because you're a very serious man, Larry Boren. And we're dealing with some very serious material.
You could say that.
although whenever I say to you that we think that the North Pole is it's really the South Pole and we've got it wrong, that really sounds kind of funny. But there are some ramifications about that that make a lot of sense and can change the course of a lot of things.
May I clarify that?
Certainly.
A lot of people say, oh, well, that's just semantics because who cares what we call the upper pole, the north or south pole. Wrong. Totally wrong. North pole of a magnetic circuit means a function that is entirely different than a south pole function. And in terms of yin-yang philosophy, which is my basic philosophy, the north pole is the emitting or masculine aspect of magnetism, and the South Pole is the feminine or receiving aspect of magnetism. So therefore, they are two entirely opposite. Now, it so happens they've discovered the upper pole of the Earth is the receiving pole. Therefore, according to Faraday's second law of magnetism, it has to be called a South Pole to be consistent with all other magnetic laws.
Well, does this explain the unusual surge of electrons moving out of the South Pole to the up and end of the atmosphere that our satellites discovered that shouldn't have been moving there?
It very well could. Now, I may not be familiar with that exact piece of evidence you're talking about. I thought you were going to say that there is this magnetic flow of energy from the lower pole, which is the emitting or north pole, up towards the south pole, and that's what causes the compass needle to point that way. It's because this magnetic energy is pushing it that way.
Well, no, I was talking about the satellites discovered this unusual flow of electron movement. Out of the South Pole.
Out of the South Pole more than the North Pole?
More than the North Pole.
Oh, my gosh. That's an extra piece of evidence I want to latch
on. And it absolutely should. There was no way to...
To account for it.
To account for it unless you all at once change the polarity of the poles.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is something that NASA has just been shoving to the side there.
Can you find me that piece of evidence somewhere before...
I'll try to find it. It's in my files there somewhere.
Beautiful, because it adds to our case very strongly. Okay.
All right, what I want to do with you, Larry, is because we're going to try to go over about 15 or 20 elements here tonight.
That's
about
true.
How the world is inside out, topsy-turvy, and backwards. And with a lot of scientific explanation for it, but I know that there were probably some people that want to talk to you about all of these things, and we don't want to leave our friends out.
Because
we have a very astute group that listen to this program.
Right.
In fact, I really feel that... the Open Mind listeners are probably the most astute in the world.
They very
of any well, of any radio show, and it's simply because of the subject matter we go on, and they're interested in the same things that we are. Let me give you the numbers. If you want to talk to Dr. Boren tonight, the number in Los Angeles is 520. All of these numbers, by the way, end in talk, and I want you to remember that, T-A-L-K.
Uh-huh.
In Los Angeles, it's 520. In the San Fernando Valley, you're 990. In Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, it's 244. San Gabriel Valley, 448 South Bay, that's El Segundo, Gardena, Hawthorne, Inglewood, Rolling Hills, Torrance, our good friends in Rolling Hills, got a bunch of them there. Compton, Lakewood, Downey, San Pedro, you're 639. And if you're in Orange County, you're in the 714 area code or the 619 area code, either one, you're at 750. And if you're in the 213 area code, you're at 448. So I want you to call in and talk to Larry, because we're going to go through a lot of things tonight that have... It's going to give you reason to think, because a lot of the things that you're holding on to as a part of the reality just very well may be backwards.
Yes, I think it's going to blow their minds. I think it's going to send some shockwaves around the world.
Well, let's try some shockwaves, because we need to be shocked a little bit.
I think we do.
What we're doing is not right. You know, this is
something
one of the
things
is
wrong somewhere.
One of the things we're talking about, whether it's in our social sciences, whether it's in our political sciences, whether it's in our system of giving goods and services, our religions, nothing seems to be working very
financial
well.
Financial system, the judicial system, they're all...
Name it all.
Fouled
the way we
fouled
educate
it?
Our children, the way we live our lives, the way we go into marriage.
Right,
it's
right.
It's not working as well, and it could be that we have got the cart before the horse, the dog is wagging the tail.
Could be.
And you have some things for us to chew on tonight.
I certainly do.
We're not going to. We may be treating this with a little bit of levity, Larry, but it's very serious, or you wouldn't be on this show.
I know.
You know, I have gone over this with you and decided to put you here, and I think it's well worth that the folks give a chance to listen to. So, let's start once with this topsy-turvy world. You've told us the North Pole is really the South Pole.
And all four directions are backwards and upside down, and maybe that's possibly one reason we have subconsciously lost our sense of direction.
Well, now, Joe has an idea here for you. Joe, you with us?
I had a question.
Okay, Joe.
And it's about the north and the south and the east and the west being backwards. And I wondered if it was always like that. And if it wasn't, did it have any effect on the earth when it changed?
Uh-huh.
Are you talking about a pole shift, perhaps,
yeah.
Joe?
Yeah.
Well, they claim that the last pole shift was at least 12,000 years ago. I've read that. I believe that was the figure. So we're not talking about that. We're talking about the invention of the Western Compass in the 1100s. They can't place it exactly, possibly around 1150, by the Norsemen, and the Scandinavians seem to be the ones that possibly invented the Western Compass. Now, they already had the Chinese compass, mind you, in the Eastern world or the Orient. And believe it or not, they found later, it has been determined and found that for hundreds, if not thousands of years, the Chinese were using an opposite compass, believe it or not, with its needle pointing to the lower pole of the earth. And this was brought out in a book on magnetism that I found in my research. But it's only known to a few Western minds, and of course a lot of Chinese minds know about it. Now, that's part of the answer. So what I'm saying is that they, from the time they first, if you want to know what the basic mistake was, they can say, well, it was kind of an excusable mistake that they said, okay, let's define the compass needle that points to the upper direction of the earth, which has been called north for hundreds or if not thousands of years. Let's call it the north end of the compass needle because it's pointing to that north, so-called north direction or north pole. But actually, that violates the first law of magnetism that any schoolboy of 12 or 14 should know. And it's a miracle that no great scientist has caught this in over 700 years, that a North Pole cannot be attracted to another North Pole, only to a South Pole, and vice versa.
Are you talking with the compass in the magnetic north?
Yes. We're talking about the magnetic North Pole or the magnetic pole of the upper region of the Earth and how it attracts a compass.
And one more question.
Yeah.
I don't remember where I heard this. And it was only said once, and I've never heard anything else about it. And it was about our galaxy expanding at a tremendous rate, and they didn't know what effect it was going to have.
We're going to get into that in a little bit, by the way, about how that's wrong.
Yeah, that's right. We are. So maybe if you'll stand by for 10 or 15 minutes, we'll reach that particular point.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye. Thank you for calling.
All right, Joe, thank you very much for your questions. You're spending a Saturday night with Bill Jenkins and Dr. Lawrence Boren on the Open Mind program. And what we want to give you some food to think about is that a lot of the things that you think are real, that is a part of our reality, just very well may be backwards, inside out, upside down, topsy-turvy, or however we want to go to it. And it's some very serious stuff we have for you to think about tonight, so you stay with us. I'm Bill Jenkins, it's KABC, and it's 21 minutes past 10. On KABC. And we are talking about the fact that most Well, a lot of the things, not most of it, but a lot of the things that you hold near and dear in your mind in terms of physics and the way the universe works and perhaps the society works is on target. This may be backwards, is what we're about. Now, Joe alluded to the Big Bang theory a minute ago. I know this is probably a little bit out of your schedule there, but you want to get down to that and show that why the Big Bang theory is a bust?
Yes, Bill, we could get to that. That was point E on my outline. So we'll jump to point E. Okay. Our main astronomical model, which is the genesis of a universe that is highly organized, but unplanned and uncreated, mind you, forever running down, yet forever expanding at the same time, with no advanced cosmic intelligence behind it to create and control it. Such a model, the universe is now also beginning to fall apart. Because, why? Because it's inside out and upside down according to the latest evidence and findings. Point one, the recent discovery of a small neutrino mass leads finally, say experts, to an expanding and contracting, or cyclic, well-ordered and totally symmetrical universe. This is also well supported by Einstein's equations for a cyclic universe. Point two, recent discovery that the entire universe is rotating fits not at all into the present Big Bang explosion theory, unless radically altered to include what we will hereby call a divine fiat commanding the universe to rotate as it expands outward. Without that divine fiat, there is no way of explaining why it chose to rotate. Okay, point three. This divine fiat could only come from that part of the universe which is not rotating, namely that mysterious central something which is motionless and at absolute rest and around which everything else is rotating. Ancient mystics called this central something the great central source. This, by the way, is probably the strongest evidence yet that science and religion are, perhaps, about to unite. Now, there is one further point. I'll make it. Fourth is the amazing evidence shown in one magazine called the Sciences Journal. And I quote, "For some mysterious reason, the vigor of the Big Bang explosion was matched so delicately to the gravitating power of the universe that the galaxies had just enough speed to escape each other's gravity, yet not so much as to too rapidly disperse. This matching of explosive vigor to gravitating power is accurate to no less than 1 part in 10 to the 60th power.
1 to the 60th power?
10 to the 60th power.
10 to the... Well, that's
one with 60 zeros after it.
It doesn't give too much room for error, does it?
Doesn't really, no. And this astonishing fidelity has puzzled cosmologists for a long, long time. Why should the universe be arranged to such a phenomenal accuracy, says the author in this magazine, The Sciences. And that was in third and fourth a month in this year. This was just, I think, the last issue, page 35. The answer is, it shouldn't be arranged to such phenomenal accuracy unless something like a guiding cosmic intelligence is in control. I mean, that's the only way. If anyone can think of another reason why it should, please, let's hear from you. We'd like to know if there's any way that all of this could be true without some kind of a supervising and guiding intelligence from the very start of the universe right up to this very moment.
Well, now, Larry, you're doing some things here to the scientific community which they don't appreciate. It seems to me, for the most part, they like to believe that for some reason all of this energy came together, created matter, did all of the things, because matter is just a lower form of energy, moving at a lower vibration, in a way. And it just one day, all by itself, for no reason or another, exploded.
Yeah.
And it created a big bang thing, and it did enormously precise maneuvers.
Exactly.
And created galaxies, and within the galaxies were billions and billions and billions of stars, and around the stars were billions and billions of planets. Sure. And all this happened just by some sort of quirk of fate or
accident or a random choice.
And what they're saying to us now is that this explosion happened, this Big Bang, billions of years ago.
15 billion.
And within a period of time, we're all going to be flung out into infinity. You know, right now we can see the stars.
Yes.
But we're going to be flung so far that one day we're just going to be alone out here so far away we can't even see the stars.
Right, because they believe it's all expanding infinitely.
It's all expanding infinitely.
Without ever coming back towards...
And that there is no rhythm or
rhyme or
consciousness or
plan,
some sort of plan about that.
Or purpose.
Because for some reason or other, it is very difficult for our great great minds of our time to accept the fact that there is a mind greater than their own.
Exactly. That's the rhythm.
And that there is, you know, the religionists may want to call it God. It doesn't make any difference what you want to call it, but there is,
we say,
here on the Open Mind Show, a infinite intelligence greater than ours.
Can't be that.
And we're not trying to be metaphysical, and we're trying to be spiritual. It may be another human being that has got great powers that we don't have yet. We haven't reached them. Whatever it is. But you're saying the Big Bang Theory is a bust.
Yeah, that it's only part of the picture, in other words. They just haven't filled in all these latest details that have been discovered.
That indeed there is an expansion of all of the celestial beings going on, but there also is a very cyclic contraction of them.
Return to the source.
And everything is moving in order, and order doesn't come without some sort of intelligence to direct that order.
Exactly.
It doesn't happen by
itself. Right.
All by yourself.
And it's all symmetrical and all in perfect balance. But if they leave out the contracting half of the cycle of the universe returning to its central source, naturally they have an unbalanced, unsymmetrical picture where it's all running down. They call that the second law of thermodynamics, which they say is perhaps the most fundamental law in physics. Well, that's, in my book, nonsense, because that's only taking in half of the reality. It's the other half of the cycle, the other oscillation, is where all that energy that's been moving out and expanding outwards will be drawn back, you know, towards the source again. Therefore, you can't say that we're living just in a universe where everything runs.
But there's a cycle to it.
There's
a rhyme or reason to it.
Right. Exactly.
And you do not buy the fact that that just is a natural happenstance, that there is absolutely something dictating that order.
And I'm saying that I'm finding more and more science, that is advanced science, a few of them are beginning to favor this point of view. Yeah.
Well, you know, I deal with a lot of scientists on the show.
And they have the evidence.
And more I hear them talking about the great consciousness. But they have a lot of, you know, somehow or another, they really skirt around the word God,
mm-hmm.
which is all right with me, if you want to skirt around that.
That's right.
But the inference is still there that there is something of enormous intelligence
right.
that is running and operating, or at least setting down the ground rules on how things are going to work.
Controlling the overall patterns.
All right, let's go to another caller. You've given us two good ones here tonight. Let's see what Wayne has on his mind. I believe it is Wayne. Are you with us?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just got through reading the article that Mr. Boron put in the Science Digest.
Mm-hmm.
And the questions that I have basically are concerning the magnetic physics, you know, magnetic physics.
That's all right. You can go back to that because we've already started on that.
All right. Sure.
And, okay, in research that I've done, because I'm right now taking classes in metaphysical physics.
I think you'll enjoy the show tonight.
And Lord, I can't remember what his name is, but he went to the North Pole, the English explorer anyway. When he reached the North Pole, his compass...
Was that Peary or Cook or... I don't know.
Cook, I believe, yeah.
It might have been Cook.
Lord Cook.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay, the compass directed to the opposite direction the second he stood at exactly the North Pole. And the same thing happened on all the expeditions that have gone to the South Pole. The compass has changed direction.
Yes, well, I think what you're alluding to there, when they get near the pole, either pole, the compass needle will suddenly, if they were standing right over it suddenly in the last few seconds, the compass needle would take a dive straight down the needle. In particular, at the North Pole, I think at the South Pole, it would be the needle, the arrow on the needle would be pointing straight up.
Are you talking about the magnetic pole now or the axis pole? Because there's a difference.
The magnetic pole, yeah.
Yeah, because the axis pole, your magnetic compass is going to read otherwise.
Right. So we're strictly on magnetic poles here. The unfortunate, we do not yet know why the axis of the Earth is 23, it's about 11 degrees off from the magnetic
It changes
polar
almost
axis.
From day to day.
Yeah, the magnetic axis seems to change from the geographic axis. And why that is, that's one of the remaining mysteries we have yet to solve. But they're quite close. I mean, they're within 1,000 miles or 800 miles or something like that at each pole.
Well, we see the northern magnetic pole just drifting across northern Canada willy-nilly. I can't see that we have developed a cycle for its movement. But it does move.
Yeah, let me mention this. Now, we're going to open up. We're going to blow up in a new ball game here for a second.
That's what we're all about. Go ahead and do it, Larry.
Okay. I have with me, I just brought it along just in case we ever got to this point, but we're getting into it right now. Yes, the Earth is really hollow. Way out there, way inside, I should say.
I haven't bought that yet.
No, but let's consider a few things. The Russians in, well, this was based on one geophysicist from UCLA, at least, Professor William Jameson, who has written a book on that all planets are hollow inside, according to the requirements of their structure and so on. But anyway, we won't go into that particular point, the point I'm making at the moment.
I know Jules Verne thought he was. He wrote a good book about
it. Of course.
But Don Wilson wrote another book about that.
Right.
But I'm not sure that that is really, really supported a great deal of fact. You want to give us
this is something a little bit related to it.
Okay.
The Russians found in 20 years ago in study of surveying in the northern area, the northern region around the pole, that the migration of the pole, apparently of the North Magnetic Pole, so-called, describes an actual circle. It is not just a meandering at willy-nilly, but it seemed to describe in their reports, they did a graph on it, and I saw the picture of the graph, and it actually describes almost a perfect circle right around that North Pole, so to speak, with the Magnetic Pole at the center of it.
I mean, the movements of the...
The movement
of the Magnetic Pole, if you were to chart them, they would be sort of a circle.
Around the geographic North Pole, and forms a circle. And, of course, the author of this particular book I was reading felt that that was suggesting, you know, that this big opening that's been seen in the northern region of the Earth.
We have one satellite picture that certainly suggests that.
That certainly suggests that there's something like a huge opening. So the Russian point of view appears to be that the magnetic pole is traveling around that circular opening, and that the geographic pole may be at the center of that circle. But anyway, there's some tie in there that I'm suggesting may have validity. I'm not going to hold out for that strictly, but just throwing it in for consideration.
Well, Larry, I'm a very open-minded guy, and I talk to a lot of people.
Right.
And I got to tell you that just from my point of view yet, because I certainly am not a physicist or any of those things, I'm just a guy that gets into this a lot.
You do.
I can't say that I go with the open, with the hollow earth idea.
It's only worth looking into some of the evidence.
I've read the books, and I have talked to the guys who wrote the books. And
can we get through to this William Jameson?
I don't know about William Jameson. I'd like to have a copy of that article.
Yeah, former geology professor at UCLA who wrote a book called Hollow Worlds and claims he's got lots of evidence to support it.
Because there are stories that there are civilizations in the corner, and a lot of the flying saucer phenomena we have has to do with that society that lives down in there.
Some kind of...
I'm not ready for that one. You know, I'm ready for a lot of things. I'm not ready for that one yet. But
I know that
mean anything, you know. That, you know, Billy is not what you would call one of the smartest people in the world, me. And
well, you just want more evidence.
I just want more evidence on that particular thing.
We all do.
All right. And we'll get some more evidence from you, Larry. We have a lot of things to go over in the next year. We've only covered two. You have about 15 or 20 things you want to tell us about.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. We have found out that the North Pole is the South Pole.
Magnetically, according to the laws of magnetism, right.
And so, therefore, everything is backwards.
Right. And
we have found out that the Big Bang Theory is a bust. It's really a fizzle. That the universe
it's inadequate.
Is,
it's inadequate.
But the universe, it may be expanding, but it also contracts also. That there is a rhyme, a reason for it, and you say that is
because
of a...
It's a symmetrical universe, in other words, that it just doesn't keep running down as they keep emphasizing the second law of thermodynamics.
Which leads you to believe that there is a greater intelligence than just a bunch of electrons and neutrons going out there and doing their thing. You know? I really like that idea, to think that our destiny is in the hands of more than just a few electrons and protons that are doing wild things.
Doing everything by random accident and that sort of thing. Okay, are you ready for the next
one? Well, we're going to go to the next one after we take a little break.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Lawrence Boron is with me. I am Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, and it's a freewheeling Open Mind. I'll talk to you. Bob is on the line. Bob, welcome aboard.
Good evening. Dr. Boron?
Yes.
I'd like to hear your comments in regard to which way current flows out of a battery. Does the electrons come out of a negative terminal, or does a positive charge come out of positive end, or what's happening there?
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. That happens to be point H on my list of of upside-down situations.
We had a very detailed list of how we were going to go through this, Bob, and we were already to H, and we hadn't even got to A yet, so that, you know, it's an upside-down show tonight.
Yeah, that's all right. We can cover these in any sequence. Okay, I put it this way. The true cause and action of electrical force, or the law of electrical force, is taught backwards in all the textbooks by all the instructors. And we do have proof positive, yes. Especially in the case of man-made electricity. You know, I'm speaking mainly of electricity flowing through wires. To be exact, they teach it both the right way from minus to plus, and also they teach it the wrong way from plus to minus, which goes all the way back to Benjamin Franklin. And I raise this question, is that or is that not insanity to be teaching all students who want to understand electricity in these courses on electronics and electricity for electricians and so on, and one of the opening courses in physics, they teach it both ways, right and wrong. Just, and then they tell me the reason. This is the reason they give. Well, it seems that some of the early professors were still teaching the way they thought was right up until around 1900, and they found it just too difficult to change the textbooks all suddenly to the opposite way, and they figured, well, we'll just to continue teaching that way, and we'll call it a different name. So guess what? They called it current. When electrical current goes this way to the left from plus to minus, and electron flow goes to the right from minus to plus. But
isn't that a bit confusing? I mean, what's the difference between the flow of electricity? Electron flow and electrical current.
And then they end up
what's
saying,
the difference?
In order to justify it, too, I've had one professor say, well, it's really that we're saying that positive charges go to the left and minus charges go to the right. But the point is that positive charges do not travel in ordinary electrical circuits. Now, they will bring up this situation that is a very special one, the case of semiconductors, where they have, shall I say, created this myth, I will call it, but it appears to be something that could be described as flowing to the left. You see, they say...
Are you with us when we say flowing to the left, Bob?
Yeah, are you talking about holes?
Yes, I'm talking about holes, exactly.
Right.
I'm saying that as they trace what they... Now, remember, they haven't settled on what's really happening inside of wires when electricity flows. Mm-hmm. I've heard two or three or four or five different theories because they say we really don't know. Okay, you can say Heisenberg principle of uncertainty. They just can't tell what's really going on. But one theory is called the bucket brigade, where each electron passes a charge, its minus charge of electricity or electrical energy, to the electron next to it on the right, and then the next one passes it to the third one, and they keep receiving it from the one on the left and passing it to the one on the right. Then they say, now, if you'll notice in semiconductors, when that is happening, it frees a hole each time. Or, wait a minute, now, I'm possibly getting that confused now. I should go into the second theory of electron flow, and that is that each electron actually does jump to playing musical chairs, as it were. You know what musical chairs are. So when one electron jumps to the next chair to the right, then the one on its left will jump to its chair to fill it in. Now, what they say is happening, that is a series of vacancies are opening up that are moving to the left. And these vacancies or holes that are moving to the left while the electrons are jumping to the right is a flow of positive current. Now, that's pretty far-fetched in my
mind. Larry, we got musical chairs and a bucket brigade going here all at the same time.
The reason I raise the question is because I've heard that there is an electron flow and a conventional current flow in the other direction.
Yeah, well, what the devil do they mean by that? I mean,
we're talking about semantics here.
Yeah, see, it's all they're doing is creating confusion in the mind of any student who is trying to grasp and master what's really happening, and then they finally admit, well, we really don't know what's exactly happening, but we do believe, basically, that electron energy is flowing to the right from minus to plus. Now, they do believe that, and they will admit that Ben Franklin had it wrong about the electron flow, electron energy going from the... from the plus charge to the minus charge.
See, your question is very good, Bob. Actually,
yeah.
It's extremely good because we want to clear up this little thing here right now, and that's what Larry's trying to do.
Well, I appreciate your time. Bill, I must say I miss your Sunday morning program.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, you go with us a long time, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, sir.
Well, I miss it, too. You know.
Okay, thank you.
I hope that helped out a little bit. It's still a confusing situation.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Bob. Appreciate that. And I appreciate your comment about the old wedge report. But what is interesting to note, that there is a new science in electronics now. I don't know if I've had a chance to even brief you on this, Larry, where
maybe
scientists have learned how now to organize electrons through a conductor, much like we organize the movement of electrons with light, a laser light. And we, by being able to organize the electrons, move them through a conductor like that, we get rid of the musical chairs and we get rid of the bucket brigade, as it were, and you're organizing the electrons of electricity through a conductor like a laser does light. And it moves with a highly efficient state, and you can increase the efficiency of electricity in this fashion now, which is now being employed by our government, thank you.
Amazing.
By about 80 to 90%.
Is this from Tom Bearden, by any chance?
Tom Bearden, Bill Tiller, and some of those people have developed that for the Pentagon, yes.
Oh, great. I'd like to see the latest research on that when you have a minute.
Well, it's the way we'll probably be doing things in the next 2 or 3 years. We'll organize electrons through a conductor, and you don't... homage almost disappears. We just won't have that anymore unless you just want that.
Which is going to disappear?
Homage. You know, the resistance in a wire.
The resistance. Homage, yeah, oh, I see. Right.
Which reduces the need for the superconductor and all of those other things. That's...
In other words, they'll have superconductors at room
don't
temperature.
Don't need them anymore.
But at room temperature, the equivalent of...
Anything can be a superconductor if you're organizing the electrons, and we have found out...
Coherent.
We, I mean the scientific community here in the United States, has found out how to organize the movement of electrons through a conductor.
Amazing.
Which may be a little surprising to our friends at Caltech and TRW, but that's what's going on.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Okay. Do you want to go to another one of your
excuse me, one
things here?
Yeah, I'll go to what I put down as our second point originally, our main biological law. Okay? It's called Darwinian evolution. Right? But it's proving more and more to be upside down, backwards, and inside out. Now, it's been going for
a minute. You're talking about you and me whenever you talk about that.
Yes, and what scientists' opinion of you and me is, that is. Okay, number one evidence is from Edgar Mitchell, someone you are familiar with.
Oh, guest on this show many times.
Right, and his group called the Institute of Noetic Science, I believe.
One of the finest groups in the country.
Right, I've been reading some of their terrific material by Willis Harmon.
Ed will be on in the next couple of months, by the way.
Oh, excellent. Okay, now their theme, I remember reading this in a thing, by the way, Andreev Puharich interviewed Edgar Mitchell. And
we'll be on next month. Bye.
Oh, great. Well, we're touching all the main
we
guys.
We try to get the biggies here.
You get the biggies here. Now, this is what their conclusion was after, roughly 10 years of study. Consciousness had to exist from the very start of the universe because it's, first of all, so different completely from matter, and secondly, it has power or control over matter, which they have demonstrated in experimental situations and studies many, many times. For it to evolve out of matter, according to Darwinian thinking, they say is totally absurd. Okay? That's point one. That's one group who is undermining Darwinian evolution theory. Okay? Point two, doing the same thing from a different point of view, is from Dr. Wickramasinghe of Wales. It sounds like a Hindu, but he's teaching at Wales. He's one of the leading mathematical physicists in the world. Along with Fred Hoyle, he's been working on some new ideas. Okay, and he makes the statement. It's also ridiculous to suppose that the information provided by one single primitive bacterium can be upgraded, finally, to produce a man and all other living things. Okay, that was his favorite statement. And here's the third piece of evidence to undermine Darwinian evolution from Drs. Epton and Lovelock of England. And this came out just a year or so ago. That a higher intelligence apparently prepared Earth's atmosphere for living things in two aspects. The control of the oxygen content, which is so vitally important to both animals and humans, and the control of the temperature range. Those two aspects have been controlled, they say, since the inception of the Earth practically. And there's no way that science can explain how those two things could be delicately controlled within 1% of variation, let's say, even though it's being bombarded constantly by outside forces from the galaxy and the solar and the sun and so on, which, you know, it had to have, they're saying, a rheostat or a control system built into the Earth, supervised, mind you, they say, by some kind of an advanced intelligence. A higher intelligence had to be controlling that situation.
Well, let me add this to you. Now, we know... I mean, the data is... There is no way you can deny the data that there have been... there has been a number of catastrophic changes in the Earth. Pole shifts, for instance. Mm-hmm. Great pole shifts. Now, if the world was not on the axis that it's on, at the proper relationship to the sun, tilting back and forth, as it spins, giving us our climatic changes. If you were to take the pole and shift it 90 degrees in one direction, this planet would not be conducive to life as we know it.
Right.
In fact, life would not exist. You would have a very hot North Pole and a very cold pole. Nothing would happen. And there is a lot of evidence to suggest that some enormous changes happened on the planet. The pole was shifted in a certain way. Other changes were made to line it up just perfectly. Whereas before it wasn't perfectly aligned. It was just a celestial body sitting here spinning an Earth where life could not exist. Some changes were made to it to make it a pristine and ideal place for life to exist. And that happened before life existed.
Yes.
Now, are we to believe that that happened just because of the willy-nilly movement of electrons and protons and all of the other things that our great bushy-brained scientists like for us to believe?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
I don't buy it.
Their point of view is very far-fetched when you analyze it very carefully.
Theirs is more bizarre than ours by saying that there was an intelligence that came along and said that this is an ideal place for people to live because it was our life to exist. It's in the temperate zone of a planet. Let's make some changes so that it will work well for them. Give them seasons, give them things, all of the stuff that we now enjoy. It did not exist at one time on this planet. We know that for a fact.
Right.
Okay.
And something happened to make it exist.
Now, we're going to take a break here for just a second and go to our callers again and let them chew on these for just a second. I'm Bill. All of the things that you want to, which means you're going to have to come back because we're going to talk to Jim right now because Jim has a question about the Big Bang Theory. Jim?
Yeah.
Are you talking to the guy that says the Big Bang Theory is all wrong?
We hope we're blowing your minds a little bit at least out there.
Good, Larry. Thanks very much. I had a question about it. Several years ago, maybe 10 years ago, when I was in high school, I went to a seminar at Caltech. Mm-hmm. And I was a budding scientist at that time, trying to decide what I wanted to do. And they sat us down and took us through an entire day full of science and filled our minds with ideas. One of the things that I remember is they described three separate occurrences or separate theories on the beginnings of the universe. Two of which I want to describe right now. One is point that starts out with a whole bunch of mass and energy, and it explodes, and everything flies into the universe at a certain rate, and it's expanding, and which is what you just described. The other one is the fluctuating theory, where not only does it expand, but it slows down to the point that now it begins to fall back on top of itself, and this is a cyclical motion.
Cyclical,
exactly.
Which we also described, yes.
Right. But the thing that they brought up, or the thing that they said will prove one way or the other, is the people that go around and look for mass in the universe.
Look for mass?
Mass.
Okay.
In other words, there's a formula that's something about force equals a constant times the mass of the second object over the distance squared, right?
Okay.
Okay, and so therefore, if we can determine that there is enough mass to, in a sense, pull itself back together again, then we can say, okay, there is therefore the possibility that everything's going to fall back together again, and as it collapses on itself, in a sense, then it will come back together in this big ball of mass and explode again.
Right.
And I wondered if any of your research had determined whether this question of how much mass, you mentioned 10 to the 60th.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like we're right on the border if that is the error discrepancy between, yes, we have enough, or no, we don't.
Okay, let me answer your question real quickly here. I quoted, when I went into the main astronomical model of the Big Bang Theory, point one was the recent evidence of a small neutrino mass.
Right.
I'm sure you've heard of this.
Right.
The Russians seem to have found this somewhere between 16 and 40 or 42 volts, electron volts, they have now assigned to the mass of the neutrino. And the conclusion of this particular article, which I'll quote to you, is from the Sciences Journal, 381, that's January, March 81, page 10. Okay, their final conclusion was that this one discovery of the fact that the neutrino has a small mass has supplied mathematicians with enough mass to totally overcome the Big Bang explosion and make the universe finally recede back upon itself.
Okay.
And this was the conclusive evidence that you're talking about, that you're looking, that they've been waiting for and hoping to find, or at least some of them have. It has been found approximately, say 2 or 3 years ago.
very interesting, especially because they were looking for it back, maybe I heard this lecture in 73.
Right.
So they were all ears waiting for this discovery.
Okay, so this definitely then, according to your own statement, verifies the choice of the cyclic or contracting and expanding and contracting universe over one that's just simply expanding forever.
Right. That is exactly correct. Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting that these men, you know, many years ago, and of course it wasn't even new then, you know, we're actively in process trying to find this extra mass that they, because they said this is the most likely possibility of the three.
Yeah, it's very interesting that they were aware that this is the missing link that they had to find. And then actually a group of them, apparently Russian scientists, actually went out there and found it. Maybe they weren't even looking for it.
Yeah, well, one last real brief point. Well, never mind. I know you got to go.
You got to be brief here because we've got just a few seconds.
Comment on how you determine a universe rotates. In other words, with what point do you take reference?
Okay.
I tell you what we'll do, Larry.
Yeah. Hold that for a second.
You want to hang on, Jim, or just listen? We'll answer that when we get right back.
Okay.
Because we've just run out of time here. We're going to pause for news. Our hour is done, but we have another hour to go tonight with Dr. Lawrence Boren on Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. Stay with. Backwards world that all of us live in. We have found out that the North Pole is the South Pole. We have found out that the Big Bang Theory is wrong.
Backwards.
Backwards. That it isn't the Big Bang Theory.
Well, it's only half true anyway.
Well, that's just half of it. But that there is some guiding force behind all of that. And I'm glad to see that you're talking about those sort of things. We have found out that electrons don't really move the way that science likes to say they are.
Half the time, right.
That it really isn't the Bucket Brigade and the musical chairs parade that's going on. That whenever they knew something was wrong, they just wanted to forget it and say, well, we'll give it a different name. We'll call it flow, and we'll electron flow on one hand and current on the other.
Right.
And hope that nobody asks any questions because we don't have the answers. But, of course, Larry Boren asked the questions and comes up with a reason to find that... we just can't get by with that. Are you ready to take another caller here before we go further?
Well, now, should we do that answer that the gentleman called in on?
That's right. Answers.
On the rotating universe.
Right.
Okay.
Is Jim still with us?
Is Jim still out there?
On 9? All right, Jim, you still there?
Yep.
Okay,
could you repeat your question real quick?
Sure. When you were describing earlier your point about the rotating universe, in terms of the Big Bang, you mentioned about this... central mass in the universe, and you also stated that the universe was in fact rotating. Correct?
Right.
And I just wondered what your point of reference or what whoever described the rotation's point of reference was.
Well, first of all, I'll tell you what my interpretation would be to that.
Okay.
And then I'll give a quote from the article itself I have right in front of me. Okay, my interpretation is this. If you can assign a point of rest to the center of anything and then say that something is rotating around it, that's all you need to arrive at that conclusion. In other words, you have to have a point at rest somewhere, and if it happens to be in the center, then you can say, if that is at rest, then we can measure the rotation around it relative to that center of rest. Now, you want to respond to that first of all?
Well, I guess philosophically, are you certain that it's at rest, or are you certain, or could it be that we're at rest and it's rotating?
Wait a minute. Let me clarify this.
Okay.
Anytime, anything... moves in a circle and rotates one thing around another, like an electron around a proton, the universe around this mysterious center. Anything, you know, let's say the periphery of a wheel rotating around the hub. There is, at the center, there has to be a point that is at total, absolute rest. This is scientifically and mathematically a fact.
So let me interject some things to answer my mind, which is not, you know, evidently on the same level of yours and Jim's.
Go ahead.
We talk about the solar system here. All of our planets are revolving around our sun.
Yes.
Now, although we know the sun is moving too because it's involved in a larger movement, but for point of reference, is the sun at rest then in what you're talking about, the center of the sun?
There would be, yes, according to my, let's say, my understanding of mathematics as well as magnetics and so on, there has to be a point of perfect, infinite, absolute rest at the center of any body that's rotating.
Okay, now we're, of course, we know we're rotating around the sun. Let's say that there is a point then at the sun that's at rest.
Yes.
Now, we know that the sun is a part of the Milky Way galaxy.
Right.
We also know that the Milky Way galaxy rotates about right. once every 25,634 years, I believe it is, something like that.
35 years.
Give me a few years there.
One way
now,
another.
There is a hub to the Milky Way galaxy.
Exactly.
And we're just now discovering the center of our galaxy. It's a very dense area of stars and some very, very strange X-ray emissions and neutron emissions and everything else comes out of that area. It's an enormous, it's an area of incredible energy.
Exactly. They call it this, they're suspecting it's either a quasar source or a black hole source, they call it in their terminology.
But we realize that the Milky Way galaxy now is just but one of a large number of galaxies.
Millions,
we're talking
billions.
About billions.
Galaxies.
But the Milky Way galaxy seems to be involved in a little cluster of galaxies. Little, listen to me.
Yeah, listen to you. It's called a metagalaxy.
That are also moving in some sort of a movement within
okay.
still a greater movement.
Right.
And we don't know how far these great movements of galaxies are moving.
True.
And we've just now lost my ability to comprehend all of this space and everything.
Right.
But I just wanted to kind of bring that
all right,
out.
Let me carry on
the issue here
from that one point, Denzel. Okay, at the moment, at the latest thinking of astronomers, they've only gotten up to the level of metagalaxies. Now, I'll familiarize you with this fact. They've gone from the level of galaxies that are rotating around in a metagalaxy, and then they do agree there has to be a group or an enormous group, maybe a million or billion or trillion, metagalaxies, mind you, rotating also around something. Now,
I have to bring that up because I haven't got beyond the San Diego freeway yet.
Oh, you rascal. Now, the point is this, Phil, that they haven't gone any...